Welcome to Books Aloud. Whether you're looking for your next page turner or want to hear the stories behind the stories, you're in the right place. Enjoy the show. Joining us from sunny Queensland, we've got an international here on Books Aloud today. I have Donna Goodacre, author of The Spirit Remains, part of the Unbroken Spirit series. Welcome to Books Aloud.
Thank you for having me. And it's not actually sunny Queensland today. It's raining.
Oh, yay. Well, it's pretty, yeah. I bet you it's warmer than here, though.
There is a God. Yeah, it's 23. It's not too bad.
Okay. Yeah, I think we had an overnight low of about 2 last night, and it's maybe getting to 15. Oh. So, yeah, you're winning in the weather department, even if it is raining. Yeah. But you do spread your time between New Zealand and Australia. You certainly have a lot of roots here in Aotearoa.
Yes. I spend 6 months of the year in each place, and basically in New Zealand I write and hang out with my friends and go to book fairs. And back here in Australia I do the family thing with children and grandchildren.
Oh, gotcha. That's fantastic. Well, I wanted to talk about your book today that's been released not that long ago. And it is it's the third book in a series, and it's a saga set in New Zealand and England, but also centuries apart, which is quite interesting. It's part fiction. This is my words, part fiction, part non-fiction. Can you tell the listener the background to the series and a bit about the story?
Yeah, well, briefly, it all started probably about 7 years ago now, when I just thought I would write down a few things for my kids about my whakapapa, because I'd always wondered about the Māori side of the family, as did my mother. I discovered a few things, more than she did, with the privilege of having the internet, etc. And after I did that, it just got so interesting that I wanted to fill in the gaps, and one thing led to another, and it turned into a 105,000 word novel, and I thought that was it. But then one of my work colleagues I was teaching at the time asked me, well, what happens next? And I thought, well, I don't know, perhaps I should just keep going. And that's basically what happened. I'm now onto my fourth book.
In the same series?
In the same series. It's supposed to be a trilogy, and it is, but now I've begun a prequel because I couldn't help myself. Started late. I was in my 50s, so, yeah, I think, well, if I'd started a long time before that, who knows how many books I would have.
Yeah, I don't know if 50's late. I think 50's a great age to start writing because you all that knowledge behind you as well and wisdom.
Well, that's the point, and that's what people say, and I tend to believe that now too, because I couldn't have written them in my 20s, for instance.
Did you always intend to write with non-fiction woven into the fiction?
I always wanted to write the non-fiction, but I wasn't going to put fiction into it. But when you write, like a family story, and you're delving into the past, there's lots of parts that you don't really know, and you have to assume what might have happened, and so that's what actually did happen. I've just filled in parts that I didn't have any information on.
I haven't read the other books, but there are some pretty emotionally charged themes in the one that I have read, this one, The Spirit Remains, that they go through the book, and one being a gay relationship in the 1800s. How did you discover that or gather that information?
That was one part that I actually did kind of make up. I do have Colin Greenwood was my ancestor, and he was a painter, so all that is true. And everywhere he lived and the things that a lot of the things he did are true. But we always wondered, family members and myself, why he never married until he was into his 30s, and he married his cousin, and she was a widow, and they had no children. And so we just kind of put two and two together and thought, well, considering the times in London in the 1880s, it's the whole kind of Oscar Wilde era. They lived in London and then went down to Eastbourne, very bohemian. we just kind of assumed or presumed that that might have been the case.
But there's some artwork in there that appears as well. That artwork is real, isn't it?
It's real, yeah. So Colin was most, in fact, 99% of my characters are actual, real people, real names, real events and places. I've just made up three in the series just to, you know, fill it out a bit and explain a few things.
Yeah, it's fantastic that real life can be way more interesting than some things that we can think up ourselves sometimes. So were the letters that are in the book, were they real or imagined?
The letters are imagined based on real facts.
Okay. How did you find all these facts? What was the process there? Is it talking to relatives or how on earth did you find all this information out? Well, were you looking through old photo books or what happened?
It started off with photos. I'd always had photos, and my mother was very keen on her Māori heritage, on learning about it. She spoke to Reel in a time when it wasn't popular, and she instilled in me, you know, a lot of the history that she knew of. So I went from her, had a couple of birth and death certificates, but not many. So, yeah, it's a process of papers passed, you know, going back through records like that are online. Fortunately, a lot of the people in my books did appear in newspapers for one reason or another. Like Hohepa, one of my main characters, he did play the violin for dancers in Hamilton.
Wow.
In the 1800s. He was quite a popular person. They call him a half-caste in the funeral notice, as they did.
Oh, it's dreadful, isn't
it? But well-respected, they say.
Yeah, yeah. I guess you can look at it as a word that they use, even though we cringe when we hear things like that. It's just a term, I guess, they used and didn't, maybe through ignorance, didn't think any better of it.
Yeah.
But you've got a real spiritual
thing. And you kind of
have
to stick to that, you know. Like,
yes.
I wrote, there's a few things I wrote in my first book that a couple of people took exception to before it was published, who I ran it past them, and they did say, oh, you can't say that. And I said, but it has to be authentic. You know, I have to use the words that were used then. I mean, I wouldn't use them today, but you have to kind of, you know, be aware of the times.
It is good to be reminded of, you know, how people were thought of or spoken about in those times, very similar to how women were treated as well.
Exactly.
You know, if you take out all of that, we're all fairly treated back then, it'd be like, oh, hang on, that's not how it happened.
No. That's right. And that's another thing that I try to bring out in the book, all three books, is women battling society and achieving goals and being independent, and hopefully I've pulled that off.
Yeah, and running businesses.
Yep.
And also having nine children. Lucy,
about. She ended up, over the three partners that she had, she ended up with 15. Probably it's why she died in her early 50s. But
yeah, she was worn out, poor love.
She was a multitasker.
She certainly was. How on earth did you keep track of all these people? I was reading it. Luckily, you've got resources that you can go back to and check, and the family tree's like, oh, my goodness, it's enormous for, you know, just one tiny part of the family. You know, how did you then process all the information that you had? Are you a spreadsheet geek or what happened?
Yeah, it did turn out to be a spreadsheet. The first book, it's not nearly as big, The Whakapapa, but yeah, really just a spreadsheet, because I got lost myself sometimes when I was trying to work out who was related to who.
Yeah.
And someone said to me here in Australia, can you please put a glossary of Māori terms in at the end? And I thought, oh, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
And also a family tree, because you've written it yourself. You think, oh, yeah, that's this one and that's that one. But it's easy to get lost.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy, actually. It's they're great stories. It's a really nice thing for you to do, and also bring through the whole spiritual element of the story as well, which is really, really nice, that theme that goes that goes through it. Tell me how important that is to you, having that feeling of speaking about your family and having the spirit come through.
It's kind of, again, it's from my mother to me. I inherited a punamu from my grandfather through mum. And that's the kind of token that comes through all three books, trying to discover yourself. Mm. And because it was so special to mum, it became special to me as well. And especially when I did find Miriama, the title of my first book, Finding Miriama, I did find out where she's buried. And I just had this feeling. It was just, I can't really explain it, but it's I've become a character in all three stories. I'm really Narama.
Oh,
in
I see.
All three stories.
Yeah.
So I'm channeling myself in there, changed my name. My mum's name was actually Narama. And it's kind of just showing that there is this spiritual tie that binds people through generations.
Yeah. The story, you mentioned it just then, the story that binds generations together. Tell me your thoughts then on keeping these stories alive. What sort of effect has that had on your family and wider community, actually seeing that story come to life on the page?
I've had lots of comments about the effect that it's had on people, you know, because every family has a story. Everybody, well, I can't say everyone could write a story themselves, but it can be written by somebody. My own family, they weren't particularly interested in their whakapapa, because my kids at the time they were in their 20s, and I don't know that I was really that interested at the time. I remember mum used to speak to the old Māori men down at the local shops in Te Reo when I was about 14. I was so embarrassed. Oh. I'd say, "Mum, you're the only one doing this," which was wrong. But you kind of, as you get older, you become more interested in your own history. And I just think, if I didn't write these three books, then no one would know what actually happened to all of those people through, you know, from 18, starts in about 1840, and it goes right through to 1915. No one would know really their story. And I just think that would be sad.
Yeah, very sad. What were the most challenging scenes to write, either emotionally or technically?
There's probably a couple I can think of. They're so different. The first one, I guess, was when I actually went to London to Highgate Cemetery, and I had to make an appointment to walk with a guide up to the top of the hill where Captain Joseph Greenwood, my ancestor, is buried, because he was a main character in my first book. And it was just the emotion of walking up that hill through that creepy old cemetery. You know, they've used it in various movies, horror stories, Harry Potter. It really is quite gothic.
Wow.
Going into the vault, first of all, the guide couldn't open the door, and she had one of those really big old keys, and it was just like being in a movie myself. Then when it creaked open, the torch wouldn't work. And I'm thinking, I said, my husband was with me, and I said, I think we need to go.
Oh my goodness. It's like someone's telling us something.
I know, perhaps I shouldn't be in there, but anyway, everything went okay, and we got light, smelt weird, and a lot of the covers on the crypts themselves had fallen off, so you could see the coffins, lead-lined coffins that had been there for a couple of hundred years.
Wow.
It was really quite an interesting experience, and that's one that will stick with me for a long time. And we did find him, and you know, as far as I know, everything's all still there. So there was that. But then another completely different one, I suppose, was the ending. I won't say it exactly, of this book, The Spirit Remains, where I had to recount a Maori, young Maori soldier's experiences in Gallipoli.
Yeah.
And I found that even when I wrote it, I could feel myself, myself welling up, and I still do. If I read it, I still feel emotional about it, you know, because he was my ancestor, but also just the fact, you know, of what went on and is still going on today.
Yeah, absolutely. So the feedback that you've had then from the first two books, I'm not talking about family specifically, what sort of feedback have you had in general about the first two?
Well, obviously from people I know, they've been very supportive. And I think there's not many historical fiction writers around when you look at what's popular today. If I was a fantasy or romance or sci-fi or horror writer, I would probably be better known, because that's what people are reading. So I think people are quite surprised when they read the books. And also, I suppose it's the detail in them, because I've got two timelines in all three of them. So I've got modern day and then I've got 1800s. And I've got 5 points of view in all of them as well. So I think it's the complexity maybe that people will say, oh, how do you keep all that in your head?
Yeah.
well, I don't. I have plans.
Yeah. And so this one's done and dusted and number 4 is on its way. So number 4 is a bit of a surprise to you by the sounds of it. So is it still the same sort of vein? Is it still going back, in different centuries and different countries?
Well, this one, I thought I'd do something different just to change it up a bit for myself, really.
Yeah.
I thought I would make it a prequel, so it's actually just set in England rather than England and New Zealand. Mm-hmm. At this stage, anything can happen because I'm not a real plotter. But at this stage, it's just following the career of a comedian, one of the very first comedians in London, called Joseph Munden, who was born in the 1600s. And it's really because he's also an ancestor and I know a bit about him.
Wow.
It's kind of his life up to when the first book in the trilogy starts. And I hope I can make it interesting. And I mean, it seems pretty interesting already.
Yeah.
So a lot of research is about to happen. So, it won't be dual timeline at this stage. Could be. And it will just be London at this stage. But as I say, anything can happen.
So it sounds like this one is, yes, they're related, but it could be just a great story that you just get stuck into.
Could be.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't want to go any further forward from World War One at that stage when I finished. I think I thought I'd done it, I'll finish it there, but I'm thinking I just might. We'll see how this next one goes.
So you're obviously enjoying the whole process of being an author.
Yeah, I am. I call it my job. Mm. It's what I do. And I tried to take a break when I finished book 3 and it lasted about 4 days. So I think I'm probably going to keep going while I've still got some marbles left.
I love it. You probably have your marbles around
maybe
for a lot longer.
Marbles.
Well, that's it. You've got to try something new and do something different and keep the brain ticking along. So what a great hobby to have at your time
of, right.
In retirement, I'm assuming.
Yes. Yeah. Well, if I wasn't retired, I wouldn't have been able to do all of these. I mean, they would have been a lot slower. So it's one of the perks of being retired.
Were you retired when you started the first one?
No, that's why the first one took me 5 years.
Okay.
I was teaching and I'd get home from work and go, no. So it was a weekend job and then I just finished it when I retired. I just, put the full stop on there. So, it's very difficult to try and write when you're still working.
And then when you started the second one, that process must have felt a bit different, being retired, not having to go to work. Oh. Did that make you...
It was so good.
Was that easier for you to write? Did you feel like you had more creative energy?
Definitely, because I wasn't leaving it, for a week at a time or even longer. I could just do it. Well, I had a routine. I did have a routine. Sometimes I don't always keep that, but I made myself. When I got up and had my first coffee, sit down and write for however long in the morning, and then I earned... on my shopping in the afternoon and a glass of wine. So I had this this timetable, which I stuck to for all of that second book.
So the discipline, but also not too restrictive. It just gave you that time to actually just then allow yourself to write.
Yep.
This one, I'll give a little bit of information about the book itself for listeners. Lucy Chappell has already survived one great love and one great loss. Now, as the 1890s unfold, she must raise Hoorhipper's children, navigate a changing country, and welcome unlikely new alliances, including the enigmatic hairdresser Charles Patterson, whose past carries more shadows than he reveals. The book is The Spirit Remains, Our Unbroken Spirits series by Donna Goodacre, who's joining us here from Queensland. You can go and look at the first two in the series, but this one I read independently and it was absolutely super to read just on its own. But if you can get hold of all three, that'd be super, and another one on its way. So how can people get hold of the book?
Through my website and also Amazon. Generally, if you just type my name in Google, you'll find all the details that you need and my website.
The website is donnagoodacre-writer.nz. Listeners, head to the website and get yourselves into this book. Thank you very much for joining us here today and good luck with the next one.
Thank you very much for having me.
This program was produced at and first aired on Coast Access Radio with support from Erirangi Te Motu, New Zealand On Air. You can listen back to this and many other programs on coastaccessradio.org.nz, Spotify, iHeart and Apple Podcasts.